This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fuel. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Tosche Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
Outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Tosche Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Nancy.
Hi!
On today's episode, we're chatting with John Jackson Miller, author of Star Wars A New Dawn. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. And due to the magic of time travel, Bria will be joining us a little later in the show when we have John on. We're actually recording this part 2 days prior to the interview.
It's like she can jump through time.
Well, Bria is a Time Lord, so...
Oh, that explains a lot.
It explains a lot.
That explains how she can read so fast.
Uh-huh. Time Lord. You heard it here first. Before we get too much further, a note from our sponsors. Tosche Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Tosche-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel, Transformers, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast. And Her Universe just put out a few new items on ThinkGeek, including the X-Men cardigan and 4 long sleeve shirts, a Star Wars and Star Trek logo tees, and then 2 hoodies with Star Trek slogans on them.
Did you see that Storm hoodie?
Oh, and that one also, it's a Storm hoodie when it lights
glows in,
up
the dark.
In the dark.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool looking.
It is really cool looking.
Yeah, so check out all those links. Help us keep things running over here. And we go to what's new on the blog. And for what feels like a first time in a long time, we actually have a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Yes. So we've been busy on the blog, but some of it was from before because we had a special episode last week. So
that's right, yeah.
Talk about stuff on the blog. But first off the bat, we want to welcome Riorin, aka Shoshana, aka Sho. She goes by a variety of names, but she's Riorin on Twitter. She joins us in our chat a few times, and she will be our new staff writer for the blog. And she'll be handling news and the occasional column. And she wrote about some possible directions for diversity in the sequel trilogy. And it was a really neat article. It had more of an academic focus, which is always good to get to kind of legitimize our blog, I feel like.
What, we're not legit as is?
Not academically.
Oh.
I'm long.
But we have a professor of English on staff.
We do. I'm a master of history, too, but that's long gone.
I've got a BS in information technology.
A BS, you say?
Uh-huh.
We hope to get her on the podcast soon. That'll be fun to chat about stuff. But
she'll probably be hearing that little bit for the first time.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that might have to wait because time zones.
Yeah.
We're
going to have to...
far apart as
There's what,
a
4 or 5 hour spread?
It's 5 hours.
Oh,
Alaska
fabulous.
Time.
This is like trying to get someone over from the UK onto the show.
Yeah. Is it 5 or 3? It's 3 hours for...
3 hours to Seattle.
Okay. I think it's 4.
Okay.
4 hours. So, yeah. And speaking of diversity, Bria wrote an article about what Sabine Wren means for Star Wars. Being a character that represents a lot of women and girls who haven't really felt represented in the saga. Heard a lot of people say that they really appreciate having a character who looks like them and that it's a great thing to have on the show. So very cool. We also wrote a kind of a group post, Lighting the Legends Fan Fiction Signal, in which we talked about all of the untold stories or loose threads that have dangling from the Legends timeline that we really would like to see resolved. And as of right now, the only place we will probably see that happen is fan fiction. So if you are a fan fiction writer, you can go to our column and get your next story idea.
And if you do write on one of those, let us know about it. We want to read it.
But there was a few of them also that could, they could go forward with them. There was a few things like a Leia political novel, or Padme political novel, or even your suggestion for Red Squadron, which they could still do that. No reason why they couldn't.
Now, I'm just going to throw this one out there, like I mentioned in the post. Flight School, mm-hmm. featuring Wes and Hobby, mm-hmm. in the young adult segment. It would be like Hogwarts in space, and it would be lovely and magical.
Oh, yeah. In other news, I have started my Thrawn Trilogy retrospective series, and it's really long.
How many posts are you up to now, in total and sitting in the drafts?
I don't know. I've posted 4, which includes the introduction. I think I have 7 or 8 more. So I'm going to be close to like 45 posts for the entire series, which is a lot of posts.
And that'll carry us up all the way to episode 7.
Pretty much. I think I need to do some sort of crossover, saying goodbye, letting go, bonfire in the backyard type thing, where I'm not actually burning the books, because I don't believe in that. Yeah. Just like that. But so far I've posted I'm grouping like 3 chapters per post, and I think I posted chapter 6 through 8 today, or 8 through 11. I can't remember. And I am just about ready to finish the book. I have 3 more chapters left, and I'm writing the posts ahead of time so I can do Nano in November, not have to worry about posts. So if you see me talking about Heir to the Empire and the Thrawn trilogy in general on Twitter, that is why. And today I remembered that Han Solo was the first Luke and Mara shipper.
You can't argue with Han.
He said to Luke, "So you guys seem pretty cozy out there," or something like that. To which Luke snorted or scoffed or something. And that was at the end of Heir to the Empire. By Dark Force Rising, he is fully committed to the ship. And speaking of lighting a bonfire in the backyard and burning all of your books, Bria asked everyone to stop being mean to Delray because people are jerks on Facebook and social media in general. And while we all understand your devotion to the Star Wars books and not wanting them to not be canon anymore, there's a way to go about that and a way to express your opinions without being jerks. So,
you know, it's one thing to be sad, even a little upset, but the way some folks have been going about this.
You know what you could do if you're sad about it? You can write a retrospective series for your blog.
You could. But seriously, folks, stop harassing the Delray crew. What? Yeah. Why? Why are you doing this?
Like, they are all fans of Star Wars. They're all fans of the Star Wars books. I mean, their new employee was an intern, and like he was live tweeting Rebels the other day. So you can't tell me that they are not also Star Wars fans. In case you missed it, we posted our roundtable review of Spark of Rebellion. Of course, we had the podcast last week. And Bria also reviewed Droids in Distress, which aired last night. And we all liked it. We've also watched the third episode, thanks to the wonders of the Watch Disney XD app and website.
By the way, if you need a way to get Watch Disney XD onto your television on the cheap, go to Amazon and go pick up a Google Chromecast. It's $28 right now, and it will let you cast that app to your TV so you don't have to watch it on your tiny, tiny laptop monitor.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's not really a formal column, more of an informal, recurring thing that will come up on the blog. But I kicked it off today when I described why Wedge Antilles needs to be in Rebels. And basically the reasoning is because he's awesome and he fits in with the time period and the vibe that they're going for very well with the orphan backstory. And he would fit in with the age demographic they're looking to target. And you can't go wrong with more Wedge.
Wedge sold a bunch of books and comics.
Yep.
He'll work here in Rebels. Mm-hmm. It's a cameo that makes a ton of sense. I would love to see him show up in Rebels.
Yes.
And, wow, that was a lot of new stuff on the blog.
It was a lot of new stuff on the blog.
So go check it out.
Yeah. We'll wait.
We don't just do this podcast, you know.
We don't?
No. Oh. We don't. We write things post them on the internet.
Oh.
I'm not sure if you were aware of this, Nancy. That, of course, brings us into Fixer's Flash, the geeky things we've been up to. And I haven't been up to much, but Nancy has.
I've been reading the Thrawn Trilogy!
Yay!
For the retrospective! And it's fun. I really, really, really love that book series, and like, it's one of those book series I forget about, like, not forget about that I loved it, but I forget some of the plot points. I tend to forget books very easily when I read them, so only the books I've read a ton of times will I actually recall, like, oh yeah, this is gonna happen. Mostly when I read, it's like reading nonfiction, like, or reading like Wikipedia, I can remember everything. So there's a lot of things I've forgotten about Heir to the Empire. It's actually the one I think I remember the most, just because I've just read the 20th anniversary edition not that long ago. But like Dark Force Rising, I was just telling you the other day, the only things I really remember from Dark Force Rising are that Sabaoth is a jerk.
Yes, he is.
And Luke goes to train with him. Mara comes and gets him to rescue Card. And there's an attack on Coruscant. And then there's a battle and Mara is injured. And, Leia goes to Honiger. And Garmbel Iblis shows up. Somehow all those things happen in the book. I don't know what order they happen in.
Or what happened in between those things.
Yeah. I think they find out there's clones. These are all very old spoilers, people. So,
You've had 20 years.
You've had 20 years. But yeah, Last Command, really all I remember from that is that the trek across Wayland, and there's a battle at Bilbringi shipyards. So yeah, that's really all I remember. So it'll be like reading it again for the first time.
Feels like the first time. Feels like the very first time.
Although I do remember a lot of the Luke and Mara stuff because I've researched. I'm doing air quotes.
Researched.
Hey, when you write fanfic, you need to do your research. And other than that, I've been writing. I'm not writing my butt off yet, because I've been reading. But I'm trying to finish all the posts for Heir to the Empire so I can do Nano and possibly finish the book that I'm writing. That would be nice.
Getting that draft done by the end of November would be just wonderful.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're still watching Friends.
Yeah, we're on season 9. There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
We're almost to the end. So we'll take suggestions on what show to streamline next.
I thought you said we were going to watch Avatar.
It may indeed be Avatar. Okay. It's 4 seasons. The episodes are just 22 minutes each.
See, I want to watch something short. Like,
yeah, I think Avatar.
Eventually, I want to go back. I want to go back to Stargate. But I think right now I need to pout.
After we just mainlined all of Friends, we need something a little more condensed.
Either that or we just need to watch all of the movies on our Netflix queue.
Why do that?
Why?
It's an American tradition to just let things pile up in your Netflix queue and never address it.
Okay.
As for me, I got a new job in a pretty geeky field. I start that on Monday, and the good news is this is going to let us podcast with significantly more regularity than we have been over the last year.
Yes.
Because I have a set work schedule. It's Woo-hoo! Amazing.
Maybe internet access for which you can do bloggy things at work.
Yes, we have
not that we would ever condone such a thing.
Never. I mean, I can't think of anyone in the blogosphere who blogs at work. No one at all. No one.
I need to give you a long column series to do. I told you what you should do. Play KOTAR, blog it.
A Let's Play Knights of the Old Republic series.
You should.
It would be a whole lot easier if it wasn't so glitchy on Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Aw, boo.
I might have to...
Well, we did buy those Rogue Squadron comics a long time ago. You can read them.
We did, although we've also kicked around the idea of doing a staff blog project.
Well,
And we have a new staff writer now to do these things. We need to give her an ongoing.
Yeah.
She's listening to this episode with such horror right now. First, we ambush her by saying we're bringing her onto the podcast at some point. Then we say we're going to give her an ongoing column.
You can do an X-Wing retrospective.
Oh, that's retroception.
Yep.
We've said our piece on the X-Wing novels. If you haven't figured out that we think you should read them, I don't know what more we can do to help you. But yay, new job means more regular podcasting and blogging.
Yay!
And I think it's time for Deke's Dirt. We actually have news to talk about.
Yes.
And we don't have any rumors after that.
No, we don't.
Weird. But let's talk news. Deke's Dirt. Random House releases a 50-page excerpt of Tarkin.
And you can also go on the Amazon preview. If you go on the Amazon preview, you will learn Palpatine's canon first name. Apparently it's terrible. And we're about to get our reaction, a live reaction, as I look on Wikipedia, because apparently it's already been updated.
Of course it has.
I want to see it, so I'm scanning.
This is entertaining radio right here.
Okay. Go forward with the next one, because I can't find
it. Okay. And they've also released a full blurb for Kevin Hearn's Heir to the Jedi. We've got a link in the show notes that you can check it out there. I won't read the whole thing here right now, but it promises first-person Luke Skywalker. And a capable lady in a leading role.
They lied, by the way. It's not in... I don't see it on a...
They lied to us!
But it is in the Amazon preview, so I'm going to go look for that.
See that? I did a Tarkin impression while we're talking about Tarkin.
Oh, you're so smart.
I know. I'm so clever. Clone Wars, the story reels for the Crystal Crisis on Utapau.
Utapau! It's in the movie, damn it.
Which I haven't watched yet.
No! The movie, Revenge of the Sith!
Oh, right. Sorry. And the Lost Missions DVD and Blu-ray pack is set to be released November 11th. Oh, Nancy just found it.
Oh, God, that's so stupid. What does this...
So, where does this rank on the pantheon of bad Star Wars names?
It's just wrong. And the point is that It's a throwaway, and it's stupid because Tarkin calls him by his first name, and you don't call him by his first name, he'll fucking cut you. That was my F-bomb for the show.
Yeah, that's our one PG-13 allotted F-bomb.
This just seems stupid.
Is it as bad as Darth Undeadu?
Yes.
Oh.
It's the one that was on Twitter.
Yeah. Why?
Because George. I'm sorry.
We love you, George.
But you're crap at names. Okay, so, yes. Moving away from that. You all got my live reaction to that name.
Thoroughly excellent radio right there. Thoroughly excellent. Rebels is getting an order for a second season already. It actually got the order for the first episode premiered on network television.
Yay! And also, just blogged by Chris Man from Lucasfilm. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm sorry.
We're sorry, Chris.
Chris Argyropoulos, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yes.
But Star Wars Rebels premiere sets ratings record for Disney XD. And with 1.03 total viewers for the Monday night premiere of Rebels.
I'm sorry, but I just stumbled onto something amusing on Twitter. Sarah Michelle Gellar just tweets, Star Wars Rebels premiere sets rating record for Disney XD. Congrats to my Jedi.
Aww.
Aww. And we should probably explain who her Jedi is for those who don't know. It's Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes.
Yay, so congrats. Apparently the show is doing real well, and that looks like the boost that Disney XD really needed.
Yes.
So good news. Good news all around. Yes, exciting stuff. I need to pull up my show notes again.
Well, there's also some new clips released on Disney XD's website, and they also put out a new clip of Hera and Sabine hanging out in some creepy,
chilling out, Max and relaxing, all cool.
Yeah, which I'm glad. I hope they show more of them together. I hope that's actually a huge, big part of the episode, because the most recent episode on the app, Fight or Flight, was mostly Zeb and Ezra. And I liked them together.
It was a very entertaining episode.
Yeah, but I really hope that they also do that same sort of thing with Hera and Sabine.
Well, we haven't gotten any.
We need more lady friendships.
We haven't gotten any Sabine yet.
She was in the last episode a bit.
A little bit, but she's been the least...
Yeah.
She's gotten the least... development of any character through the first through the movie and first two episodes.
Yeah, I hope they develop her relationship with Hera, and because Star Wars needs more lady friendships on screen.
Yes,
there aren't any on screen except for maybe Padme and her handmaidens. That's about it.
We can do better.
Yeah,
and they will do better. Star Wars. Sorry, I skipped over one. ABC is going to air Spark of the Rebellion on October 26th. So if you didn't catch it on the Disney Channel or Disney XD, it's getting the network television treatment and will feature a new Darth Vader scene. And I don't know what I think about that last part.
Yeah, if it's just a tacked-on thing, I could deal with it. If they're trying to make it actually fit into the plot, then...
I hope not.
Because it's perfect as is, and like... We've seen three episodes so far, and the Inquisitor's only been in one scene. This isn't a spoiler to say he's not in Fight or Flight. He's not in Fight or Flight. But I believe he shows up in the episode after that, maybe? I think that the fourth episode is when he shows up, because we've seen clips of that. I really just like how it ends with that shot of him and Callus, and... Yeah, that's really all you needed. I can see them wanting to do something special for a network broadcast, and, you know, Vader's kind of a big deal if you didn't know.
And, you know, so far they've been really smart with how they're doing their cameos and such. The end of Droids in Distress was perfectly done.
Yeah.
As far as the cameo there goes.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, go watch it. You'll see what we're talking about. I'm not going to worry too much yet. I'm with you. I just hope it's not trying to shoehorn Vader into the plot there, but it's more just a Marvel post credit tag sort of thing. That would work better for me. In video game news, actually arcade news, there's going to be a new Star Wars arcade game for the first time in I don't know how long. It's Star Wars Battle Pod, and it's going to be a simulator game where you get to sit down in a flight seat, grab hold of some HOTUS flight controls and fly X-Wings through the Death Star, Skyhoppers through Tatooine, Snowspeeders, the Falcon. It'll be all sorts of cool big games projected onto this circular screen in front of you, and I really hope they bring it to Disney Quest because I really want to play it.
We get free admission, so we'll just monopolize that game.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, kid, we were here first.
I'm looking forward to that. Not a whole lot of news out of New York Comic Con. We were hoping for maybe more, especially on the book front, but we did get a big comic announcement. There's going to be an ongoing Kanan series penned by Greg Wiseman.
Yes.
And
that's what explains what he was doing not on the second season of Rebels.
Yeah, I do hope they bring him back, though. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but this comic series is going to explore some of his time at the temple, and it's going to explore a lot of the time post Order 66.
Yeah, I hope so too. It'll be nice to see Kanan as a Padawan, but it seems like they're definitely going to go that direction and show how he survived and how he started floating around from place to place.
So if you enjoyed A New Dawn, you may want to go pick up this comic series.
It almost kind of reminds me of another character whose life was destroyed and had to wander around the galaxy for many years until she was taken in by someone else. I'm sorry, I have to connect everything tomorrow. You're just giving me the most pathetic look. Sorry. Be quiet now.
Yeah, there were a couple other Star Wars panels going on over at New York Comic Con. They had a Future of Star Wars books sort of panel with the Del Rey staff that was over there, but they didn't announce anything new. Although you had an interesting theory as to what might take up one of the quarter four slots next year.
Yeah.
And that was...
What?
A novelization.
Yes.
This is, synergy here isn't quite working right.
I'm sorry, I'm just distracted by this awful name. Blame George, it's George's fault.
George, you're killing my podcast here.
All right, let's try that again.
So you had a theory.
I did.
About what book might be taking up one of the quarter four slots next year.
A sequel to New Dawn? No.
No.
What was it?
It was a novelization.
Oh, the episode 7 novelization.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but we know that. We know that they're going to have that, but there needs to be, because the last book is July. The novelization will come out until either November or December.
Yeah,
I hope December, but it might be November.
We're still kind of feeling out how the product or how the book announcements are going in this new era.
Well, Del Rey said they're working on new stuff, but they can't announce anything yet. So,
yeah. But they are at the point, though, where manuscripts must be underway.
Oh, yeah.
For the book slots that haven't been announced yet.
They need to have contracts in place. They're getting towards that part. I know they haven't really started Chrissy Golden hasn't started writing Dark Disciple yet. But they're doing the outline now. So, you know, she's basically...
Oh, is that the last book we know of for next year? And what does that one do out?
July.
Okay, so we've still got a September or October slot, and then a December slot historically that doesn't have anything announced yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see on that front.
I think there needs to be something in between that book and the novelization.
Yeah.
because it's just too long.
I imagine there's got to be at least one book that'll show up in there. But I bet we're going to hear something on that soon-ish. Mm-hmm. We're getting up to the historical wall of when we usually hear something on a new book. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Okay, that's going to do it for the news, and we're going to magically jump forward in time 2 days. Bria's going to join us for this interview. We've got John Jackson Miller here, and we're going to be discussing A New Dawn, and it's going to be a very spoiler-filled discussion.
Yes, if you have not read A New Dawn,
this is your cut point for this podcast episode.
Don't blame us.
Don't blame us. We've warned you. But yes, stay tuned. It's going to be Bria joining us to interview John Jackson Miller, and we'll see you on the other side.
Bye. All right. We have John Jackson Miller with us now. John, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Great. So we all loved A New Dawn, and we're really glad to get to chat with you about it. The first thing I guess we'd like to ask is basically how you found out you're going to write A New Dawn. And did you know right away that this was going to be the first book in the new canon, or did that come after the fact?
Well, it was almost a year ago. New York Comic Con has just ended while we're recording this, and I was at New York Comic Con in 2013 promoting Star Wars Kenobi, and found out that they were looking to do a novel that would be a prequel of sorts to the Rebels series. We didn't even know that it would be a prequel then. We just knew that it might be associated with it in some way. And so I, was interested in that time period, and threw my hat in the ring as possibly wanting to do something in that time period for this book. So the process began, and, by the time we get to, the end of the year, I'm, having, a conference call with, the folks out at the Lucasfilm Story Group, and Dave Filoni talking about, Hera and Kanan and all the characters of Rebels, and what they would be doing in their lives connected to what was going on in my book. I did not know anything about the change in canon or anything like that until I was probably three quarters of the way through the process of writing the book. And it wasn't a big surprise. I knew that I was going to be trying to keep the number of references to random other things in the galaxy to a minimum anyway, because this was, a book that's going to be attached to Rebels is by definition going to be targeted to more newer readers than necessarily you would have otherwise, people who had seen the show and are coming in to read the novel. And I did not really have to make a lot of changes after I found out about that, because of that, and also because of the fact that I try to make every book sort of seem introductory. Every novel is somebody's first, and that's how that went.
Cool.
Sorry, I just totally lost my place in the notes here. As an author, has much changed when it comes to writing Star Wars in this new story group era? Specifically in regards to collaborating with the story group, has the process really changed at all?
The process hasn't really changed in the sense that, you come up with the ideas with whoever your publisher is, and then it goes out to Lucasfilm. It's just that instead of simply, running it past the Lucasfilm fiction editor, Jen Heddle, and also, the keeper of the Holocron, Leland Chi, there's also the story group there, which is familiar with everything that's going on in all the other moving parts of Star Wars, the movies, the TV shows, and everything. And also, they participate at an early time time in the production of these books in terms of, yeah, they give us ideas, things that might be able to tie in with what they've got coming along later on themselves. You know, they're able to suggest, you know, some themes that that would resonate with readers who are also happening to see, you know, other things coming out at the same time, whether it's episodes of Rebels or movies or whatever. So it wasn't much of a change at all in the sense that, you know, it takes about the same amount of time, but it does offer some opportunities that you didn't have otherwise.
So who came up with ideas like having Kanan's original name be Caleb Doom and Vepa being Kanan's master? Like, what other things did they tell you about the characters?
That all came from them, because, you know, those are details that are so integral to the character that, you know, that was something that, you know, they knew of already, because they were working on the TV series. You know, what I got at the beginning was the story Bible for the TV series, and you know, a lot of that sort of detail was already figured out, and so it was a question of, okay, what are the parts of this character's background that I can play with, that I can tell about, then I always try, whenever, you know, I get that chance, I try to limit my footprint so that I'm not making problems for other writers who are coming along. You know, I did not know, for example, when I was writing that they were working on a Kanan comic series for Marvel at the same time, or that they had that planned. You know, the story group knew that, though, and I would assume, and so it wasn't going to be the case where I was going to write something along the lines of, yeah, and Kanan stayed in a cave from the Order 66 all the way up through the first page of my book. I wasn't going to put a paperweight on top of all those years of the character's life so that nothing could happen. That wasn't what I was there to do, and that wasn't what I did.
So a lot of fans have been, you know, curious about, or not curious, but have been talking about, you know, how the new canon and Legends and everything is going to affect, you know, Star Wars going forward. And as, you know, someone who's written extensively in Star Wars, like, how do you feel about it as both an author and a fan? Like, do you think it's going to really change much about the, you know, how the story is told, or does it, you know, will it really not affect much going forward?
Well, I think what they've done is something that they've had to do, because they're dealing with all of these, you know, different varieties of, you know, content that's going to be coming in at a very quick pace. You know, when we're talking about, you know, not a movie every 3 years, but a movie every year, when we're talking about a television series, when we're talking about, comic book series, novels, that sort of thing, all of this coming out, you know, at the same time, you know, not to mention all the other places that Star Wars stuff turns up in, you know, the supporting products, the DK Press books, the things like the role playing game, all of these things that are coming along. It really is important to just coordinate it all, and I like the fact that now when we have something that that starts off in a novel, it might well be the case that that thing that started off in the novel is something that, you know, either could feed into the movie or something like that itself, or it could well be something that the movie people have told us about and they want us to plant in advance. And I like that. I like that dynamic, because, you know, in the past, yeah, there were ways to feed stuff from the tie-in and works into the you know, the film and TV worlds. But it was, you know, it tended to happen more as the exception rather than as the product of an orderly process. And so I will be interested to see what they can do going forward.
And so when you were writing A New Dawn, you said you were trying to keep the references, you know, small because it was directly tied to Rebels. But I know they've said, you know, they'll definitely be taking stuff from Legends. Like, do you see that potential going forward and just basically kind of keeping everything in the world kind of the same, but picking characters and events and things like that?
Well, I the way that I look at it is what we have in the EU as it previously existed feels a lot like you know, if you're playing a role-playing game and you're reading all these source books, the campaign guides, the guide to the world, you know, it's got everything you need in terms of locations, species, you know, how things work, the mechanics of the galaxy, and you all also always get a little bit of history in there. But it's, you know, in those sorts of games, it's always loose enough where you, the creator, you know, the dungeon master or whatever you might happen to be, the game master, have room to build your own stories and work around these things. And you know, you use what you need to use. You know, in the case of A New Dawn, you know, I didn't use a whole lot that was in the past, but you know, there were certain things. I mean, the chemical elements, you know, thoralide and baradium. Well, you know, those were two things that had existed previously. The substances that I needed were identical in function to what had existed before. And because of that, I saw no reason not to use them. If they had worked differently, I would have been under no obligation to use a different term. But, you know, why do that? Why not make someplace up new? Just like, you know, with the Gorse system, you know, Gorse and Senda, since that system was unlike anything that we had seen elsewhere in the EU, I just decided, you know what, I'm not going to go, you know, repurpose or, you know, use a label from a previous planet just to use it. I'll create someplace new because, you know, it's easily done. So I think that's kind of the way, that it'll work is, the thing about Legends is that parts of them can be true, and I think they're just making sure that they are reserving the right to draw however much that they need at some point in the future if it happens that, you know, something in the past syncs up really well with what they would like to do in the future.
So going back a little bit, you said that they gave you the Bible for Rebels and all. How did you go about figuring out how to characterize Kanan and Hera and their relationship going backwards from Rebels based upon what they told you and what was in that show Bible?
That really was the place where I got the most help from the executive producers, Dave Filoni and Simon Kinberg and Greg Wiseman. You know, they were sending notes on, you know, the early plots that I was sending. And then, of course, I talked to Dave in the conference call. I needed to know how they were going to react to each other and, you know, what their first meeting would be like. And, you know, as things evolved, you know, I realized, okay, you know, they want their first meeting to be a pretty big deal. And, you know, they want it to be surprising for one of the characters. And I think they wanted it to be surprising for Kanan, because he was going to see in her somebody very different than he had met before, you know, enough so that, you know, he would be willing to follow her around, you know, through this adventure. And so, you know, I tried to give that kind of a meeting for the characters. It actually, that meeting actually takes place over the course of several chapters when they almost meet, you know, two or three other different times. You know, she sees him first, then he hears her, then they actually meet. I wanted to make sure that you know, what their dynamic is, you know, meshed with what it would be by the time we got to the TV show. And that, as I say, is really where they helped a great deal. You know, most of everything else is, you know, is all mine in terms of the mechanics of the plot, the mechanics of the galaxy, all the supporting characters except for Kanan and Hera. They all come from my keyboard.
And so, going you know, back to the Kanan and Hera, and one of the things I really love about that book, and also in Rebels, is the relationship that they have, because they obviously respect each other very much, and they've, you know, known each other for a very long time. One of the things I find interesting is how someone like Kanan, who grew up in the Jedi Order, is now no longer has the Jedi Order as a backbone for, like, for what he thinks and believes. So, like, the rule on attachment, would he find something like that relevant now? Because especially in Rebels, you know, he's got a crew and they're a family to him, which is completely opposite of how the Jedi were supposed to live.
Yeah, I think that he has been pretty much defying all the rules for a long time. He never formally became a full-fledged Jedi Knight. He didn't go through all the trials and everything like that. You know, at the end of the process. So I would think that he would. Well, and certainly as we see him in the book, he is a guy who has had. He's had a social life.
So diplomatically put.
I don't want to characterize that social life because I don't want to actually, you know, nail down anything for, you know, prevent anybody else from telling a different kind of story in the past. But you know, he would have been a teenage guy with freedom to go anywhere he wanted to go in the galaxy. I think he also he does avoid attachments in this book, but it's for a different reason. It's for more of a functional reason. It's because he's got one instruction, and that is to stay moving. Don't let anybody know who you are. Don't commit to anything. Hide who you are. And so, but I think that comes from a different space. Than you know, the Jedi who's committing himself to a relationship only with the Force and working towards the good of mankind and organics everywhere. I think he's absolutely he feels like he's out. He's free, and in fact, one of the dynamics that we tried to capture here is. You know, they didn't want him using the Force in his daily life. They wanted him actively hostile to the notion of doing it. And whenever he does use it, he hates himself. I needed to figure out, well, why would he feel that way? And we sort of get that in the book with him. Deciding that, this Force, it didn't really help the Jedi much now, did it? This kind of takes me back towards a kind of a story that I had wanted to tell several years earlier. The very first draft, the very first version of Kara Holt that I had created for Knight Errant, was going to be that she was going to be a Jedi who had lost the faith. This was something that would have tied into the dark times feeling of that era where, you know, the Jedi have given up on, trying to protect the Outer Rim. So she would have been just about to quit. She was going to be, just really on the edge, dispirited. And we just, decided to turn that story on its head 180 degrees so that instead she would be, you know, so devoted being a Jedi and that, you know, she would, you know, stay out and, you know, defend everybody, even at, you know, at the cost of her own life, if necessary, even if she was the only person out there, defending people. But I was able with Kanan to kind of get back to this. I mean, this sort of feeling of, well, the Force has failed me and failed all of my friends. You know what? The heck with it. I'm gonna go live without it. And the Force to him is more of a nuisance when it does appear in his life. That it you know, it's something that marks him as someone other. But it's also something that he knows he can't get away from. You know, as I say, this is not something, the Force is not something like a, you know, Iron Man's costume or his armor or something that you can just take off and never put on again. You know, you're stuck with it. You know, he's Superman, whether he puts on the cape or not, he has no choice. It is there with you. Even if you're not, you know, moving rocks or you know, doing other things that are more visible with the Force, it's always there helping your, you know, acuity with your other skills. And so he's always going to manage that.
Yeah, I really loved the scene when Hera saw him using the Force, because I liked that she knew about it. Because I didn't kind of want it to be like a, you know, a Lois Lane, Clark Kent thing in the show where she didn't know he was the Jedi. But I also liked that he didn't just go right out and bring his lightsaber out, because it kind of kept that surprise for the show. But it's
well,
still...
And that's the sort of thing that I was working with the story group on. It was those kind of questions.
Yeah.
Can she know? At the end, and we decided, okay, yeah, that would be good, because we wanted to have that dramatic moment in the book. And also, will he use the lightsaber or not? And, you know, we realized, okay, well, no, that's a dramatic moment for the pilot. And so, that's the sort of thing where, you know, the story group really helps. We're not stepping on the toes of other stories. And yet at the same time, you know, they're making things available to me that would make good dramatic meat for my story.
I just have to say, this is not all a big dramatic moment, but you're talking about Kanan's social life. And I think my favorite line in the book, for some reason, I don't know why, was the part where Kanan offers, you know, he offers to let Hera use the room up above the bar with or without his presence. And there was something about the way you worded that, that I just put down the book and I laughed for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, he's smooth, but he's not that smooth. well, I mean, this is the thing that there was a bit of a question going in as to how starstruck he was going to be, as far as she was concerned, because obviously, yeah, he is to a degree to be able to, you know, to be willing to follow her around through the events of this story. At the same time, you know, he's too smooth to be, you know, puppy dog love. You know, after her in this book. So, yeah, he's always got this swagger that's there. And yeah, I think the moment that, you know, I try to write a moment, but with every character where, you know, very early on, you can see, all right, this is the key that unlocks this person's personality or how they're going to act for the rest of the book. And with Kanan, I got it in right there with his first scene where, you know, he's hitting on the Star Destroyer captain while he's on, you know, while they're threatening to shoot him, and he's, you know, what are you wearing, you know, I mean, it's and he knows it's over the top because he's trying to, you know, have this person not bother him anymore. He wants her to go away, but that's that kind of boldness that we see in the Han Solo character, where, you know, he's willing to have the conversation with the people on the Death Star. We're all fine here, how are you? This is his moment like that, and I kind of cued in on that for the rest of the book.
We got a couple people in the chat wondering if there's any chance you may be doing some of this Dark Times comic stuff that Marvel just announced.
You know, I found out about it at the panel just as everybody else did. So it's everybody knows where I live, so they can find me. I love comics. I'm continuing to try to do some comics here and there, even though I've you know, obviously committed more the last couple of years to, you know, working on the prose part of my, you know, career. I never want to be too far away from comics for too long, though, and you know, if there's something that makes sense for everybody, yeah, sure, I'd be interested.
You could pitch Star Wars Hera.
I have no idea how that works.
Well, if you had your choice, what sort of comic book series, Star Wars? Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. That was, you know, Star Wars Hera. That sounds like an interesting idea. I think the problem with Hera simply is that she is a more mysterious character, and you know, that was the case with with A New Dawn. It's very clear that I was able to talk more about Kanan and his past than Hera and hers.
Yeah. Well, if you do have your choice, then if you can't write Hera, what comic book series for Star Wars would you want to write for Marvel?
Oh gosh.
Living in a world where you get to sign a blank contract and stipulate exactly what you want to write.
I have no idea. I have no idea. I probably have a pitch file that's got, you know, from the Dark Horse days with 10, 11, 12 different ideas. you know, movie era and before, never anything after the movie era, because I was always pretty sure that was, you know, that was filled up with all the other, you know, authors working in that time frame. You know, specifically what I don't know. I'd write a Lando book for free. I think I've said that a few times. I'm not guessing that. You know, I have no idea what they're going to want to focus on, and we'll just see how that we'll see how it goes coming up.
Sorry, I've just lost my place again. This is the trick of trying to record an interview with three hosts. You've gotten to write now two very different Jedi during the Dark Times, Obi-Wan and Kanan. So what was it like for you to write these two distinct characters with two very sort of different views on the Purge and Order 66?
Well, you know, one of the tricks is always figuring out, well, what would they know? What would they know at any given moment? How much information would they have? And of course, that was something that with Kenobi, I had to figure out. You know, I knew that he did not know that Darth Vader existed yet. He did not know that Anakin was still alive. He still feels the weight of, you know, having, you know, killed his best friend, or that's what he believes. At that time, you know, with Kanan, you know, it struck me that he would know even less. And that was, again, something that I needed to talk with the, you know, the story group about, you know, what his understanding would have been, as he hit the road. You know, you figure out that, well, okay. And then it's not just them, because you also have to figure out, well, what does everybody else know too? What is the general public know about what really happened with the Jedi and the rebellion turning into the Empire, and what do, you know, the Imperial forces know? You know, Rey Sloane, you know, the Imperial captain. I had to figure out, well, what is it that she thinks about what's happened to the galaxy, and Count Vidian. What is Count Vidian aware of in terms of, you know, the Death Star and all these other things that are out there? Everything is so compartmentalized on purpose by the Emperor that, you know, a lot of people are sort of operating in the dark. I think that was one of the things that I needed to figure out starting out with Kanan, and you know, just as with Obi-Wan, is, you know, what is their perception of things out there at this moment? you know, the reader is in a unique position when we've got these stories that take place between the movies. You know, the reader knows everything. You know, the reader knows more than Obi-Wan Kenobi does, and that's not a small thing. I have to figure out ways of taking the fact that he doesn't know that information and getting some dramatic mileage out of it. And then, of course, you know, just between those two characters, you know, obviously the major difference between them is one of them has a mission, one of them has a purpose, one of them has a place to be, and Kanan has none of those things. Partially, you know.
Uh-oh, I think we lost John.
Uh-oh.
Whoops, hang on.
Technical difficulties. Doo-doo-doo.
Oops. There you are.
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, I lost you for a second there.
Okay.
Let's see. I think we'll just segue into the next question then. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Nancy.
So in addition to Kanan and Hera, we got a lot of new characters in A New Dawn, and two of them join up with Kanan and Hera. So what was kind of your inspiration for Skelly and Zelluna? The Zelluna part specifically seemed very much mirroring, you know, current events with surveillance and tracking people and all that sort of thing, which I thought was really fun to read about. And Skelly was really annoying, but he was also really funny.
Yeah. I wanted you to hate Skelly right off the bat, but, you know, as he is increasingly medicated as this book goes along, he should become more and more fun, especially because we realize that, you know, he was right about many, many things. It's just all the things he was wrong about in the beginning led to his situation. Skelly was a character. There was a version of Skelly in every version of the plot from the beginning. I knew I wanted to have this character who would sort of be, the short fuse, loose cannon kind of character, who would, make the lives of our heroes very difficult. You can't always choose who the people that are going to be, involved in your particular, rebellion, in the beginning are going to be. And of course, you know, in Skelly, we sort of understand fully why it is that, Hera is not recruiting right now. This is the era where the only people who are willing to do anything are the ones who are either crazy enough to want to do something, or they're the ones like the husband of the Lao character that have a grievance, she doesn't want anybody who's just there as a single issue member of the rebellion. Zelluna definitely, I'm sure, there's obviously resonance in surveillance being in the headlines. I will say though that I went a different direction with her in that, she is she's not one of these people who is an activist. She's not like that guy that's sitting in the hotel in Russia right now. She is fully part of the system, and she endorses the system several times in this book. Because there have to be watchers. If there aren't any watchers, if there are no watchers, then there are many more opportunities for corruption, for violence, as she sees it. She sees herself as being integral to the well-being of the people on the planet that she lives on. It's just, her life is impacted by the Empire the same way that everybody else's is. It's a little at a time creeping up on them. She comes to realize that, this thing that was in small doses a good thing is in large doses poisonous, and the Empire is going to squelch all sorts of dissent, any way it can, so she has to make some decisions in this book.
I just want to preface the next question with saying that we absolutely loved all of the diverse characters you had in this book. It was something that definitely stood out to all three of us as we read A New Dawn. And then something we also noticed is that you crafted two very different antagonists for this story. So how did you go about coming up with them?
Well, Count Vidian, it struck me that he would be somebody, the sort of person that would have existed in the Old Republic in the final days of that body, where, you know, there would be people that the Emperor would have had as supporters, political contributors, that sort of thing. People in the aristocracy, people in the business community, and he would have wanted to bring them in to have their endorsement, starting out with the Empire, and they on the other side would have wanted all the little things that he was able to give out, the business, the industrial contracts, titles. They would have wanted to play the game of building an empire after all these years of the Republic. And so he would have been one of those characters that would have been responsive to the Emperor's philosophy. He's somebody who obviously he underwent a very painful past, and I try to as well sort of show in both the fact that both Vidian and Skelly are dealing with disabilities, that they can take different paths in response to these things. Skelly speaks out and says, not everybody who has gone through the horrible thing that Vidian did, becomes a monster like this. This is something endemic to his character. Indeed, we see this. He is somebody who is used to moving people around on paper. People are just numbers to him. He becomes the perfect person for the Emperor to use in this capacity of, sort of this industrial mover and shaker, out there to transform all of these industries and put them on a permanent war footing. Captain Sloan, Ray Sloan, I wanted to show somebody who is, still very much interested in the Empire and its opportunities. She would have seen my thinking is she would have been part of that sort of first class of graduates of the Academy under the Empire, and would have seen opportunity just exploding. There would have been certainly more opportunities in the Republic Navy during the war, during the Clone Wars, than there were before. But now, once we get to the Empire, suddenly anybody who excels has a good chance of getting a Star Destroyer command, and that's really what she has her eye on at the beginning of this book. I wanted to show her sort of learning the ropes, learning how it's going to be to operate in this military. It's not going to be one of those things where she's going to have specific goals, and if she just meets those, everything is going to work out fine. There's politics involved there. There are people who are sniping at each other, trying to steal careers from each other, and there are people out there like Vidian and Baron Danth who can either help you or hurt you. I'm hoping that this book we did sort of put across that, there is this dog-eat-dog nature to being in the Empire that is not a whole lot different from what we showed in Lost Tribe of the Sith. and the constant machinations of the people in that society trying to get ahead. We have that in spades in the Empire.
Continuing on the subject of the Empire for a little bit, I know you've mentioned on Twitter that this wasn't any sort of statement you were making, but A New Dawn was great as far as diversity of background characters goes, specifically the female stormtroopers you threw into the novel. Some people took issue with that, but I recall that you had a great explanation for why female stormtroopers made sense.
Well, yeah, it struck me that, all right, well, first of all, we're assuming that all those stormtroopers were male. We cannot know what was inside those, what was inside those uniforms. But setting that aside, and if we simply take that as a given, then we say to ourselves, okay, is there a reason for the stormtroopers to all have been male? That's an important one, and the thing is, since we were never told in the movies of anything like any kind of gender related barriers to their society. Leia was a senator. We had all these facts showing us. Mon Mothma is the head of the rebellion. Struck me that this must not necessarily be a feature of this universe, and if it's not a feature, it's a bug. And why is it a bug? What? How can you explain? Why the Empire looks the way that it does? Well, let's look at the stormtrooper units that we see in the movies. Almost all of them are elite units that are either attached to Darth Vader, or they're someplace where if you had clone troops still, you would use the clone troops. The clone troops are the only, the clone troops are a satisfactory explanation, as far as I'm concerned, for why in the early days, and also in these particular situations later on, you see male stormtroopers. But there would not have been nearly enough clones, obviously, to police the entire galaxy. And it struck me that, they would certainly draw upon local recruits in as many numbers as they would need as they're expanding outward. And once we get to the time frame where we're at in my book, I asked, is this a thing that is this a feature of the galaxy at this point? Absolutely, yes. We're into the recruiting era. We're now well past the time when, the random stormtrooper on the frontier is going to be, one of the original elite, units. It struck me that there were, there is evidence in the movies that, bigotry against droids. And of course, we also see it in Rebels as well. There is evidence that the Emperor plays different species off against each other, the same way that he would play planets off against each other. But we just don't see it when it comes to races or genders. And so it struck me that if it is a feature of the galaxy, it must not be a very important one for them not to actually tell us about it. That's the way that I went.
And I think, as we all probably know, people who are in the 501st, and there are definitely female stormtroopers in there. So,
The question is there a good story-related reason for them not to exist? And the only reason would be the original ones were clones, and the facilities were all designed for Jango Fett, medical and otherwise. Well, that's great. But we are now way past the Jango Fett days where, you know, those original, you know, troops are the only troops. And that being the case, it struck me that, it would be a much more inclusive galaxy at that point. Certainly, Ray Sloan is not a stormtrooper. I just could not see any reason that there wouldn't be, if women are running the Republic's or running the Rebellion, I couldn't see any reason women wouldn't be running Star Destroyers at the same time. The Emperor is a equal opportunity user.
I was just going to say that I don't see someone like Palpatine not utilizing people who are able, who have good skills. Can you serve me? Okay, then you're useful.
Yeah, the fact that there would be any kind of if there were any kind of fractures between genders or races, you just have to ask yourself, well, what would he be rooting that in? Where would that be coming from? The only place you could really get that would be from a history like Earth's, and not a history like theirs. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I just don't feel that that's a very science fiction-y, it doesn't feel like it would fit in Star Wars. They did not have the history that this planet did. The fact that you see a bunch of white guys running the Death Star is probably more a statement of what casting agents were able to deliver in England in 1976 than anything else. All those guys, half of them were members of UNIT from the Doctor Who episodes from back then. We should wonder, well, UNIT was a United Nations organization, and still it was all these same, nine British actors. So again, it really wasn't something where I was saying, hey, we're doing this change. It didn't feel to me like a change. It also didn't feel to me like any kind of a first either, because again, John Ostrander had done a female stormtrooper over in Legacy, and as you say, the 501st. If it's okay for the 501st, it's pretty much okay for me.
Going back to Sloan, and you had mentioned before, now with the story group, there's chances for parts of books to show up in shows and stuff in TV shows to show up in movies. So I know a lot of people have said that they would really like Ray Sloan to show up in Rebels. If that happened, what would your pitch for that episode to be? Because I'm sure you would like to see that as well.
I think it would be great, but I sure would like to tell a Ray Sloan story before then.
Yes, so please.
That's the trick. Would I love to see Ray Sloan in Rebels? Sure. Would I love to write that story? Sure, I absolutely would. The thing is, though, there's a lot of years taking place in between there, and it's much easier to tell the next thing that happens in somebody's life than something a year or two or 5 years down the road. Because of the number of possible stories that it could close off in between. That being said, we now know what Kanan is like in this year, and we know what Kanan is like in the first year of Rebels, so that doesn't necessarily shut things off. If we were to find Ray Sloan, in Rebels and discover that she has an eye patch, we would obviously find out that something has happened to her in the interim. I always use the eye patch. I know they don't really need eye patches anymore in Star Wars, but in this milieu. I would certainly be interested in writing all the characters that survive this book again at some point.
That just makes me sad for Skelly right now.
Okay, now see the spoiler warning. We're gonna have spoiler warning.
We gave the spoiler warning already before I went in. We told them don't listen if you not read the book.
Awesome.
So what's next on your plate that you can tell us about? And I think what a bunch of the chat rooms clamoring for right now is potentially a sequel to A New Dawn, one of those things that might happen.
Well, as far as Star Wars is concerned, obviously if there were something to announce that could be announced, it would have been announced. I can't speak to anything that isn't announced ever anyway. And certainly what we've got with Star Wars, there's a whole lot of stuff coming up here with these movies, and the future is always in motion, and we'll just see. I love Star Wars, and would certainly be happy to write in the sandbox again. I'm saying that now because I'm going to freak people out by mentioning that the very next book that I have coming out is a Star Trek novel.
Oh, that actually takes care of one of the questions we have for you then.
that's right. That's actually not the very next book that's coming out, but yeah, I'm doing the final or one of the final pass proofreading sessions on that book right now, and I am just enjoying the heck out of it. It is called Star Trek: The Next Generation Takedown, and it is rollicking fun. This book it is a book that takes place entirely in space with starships chasing each other. Riker pursuing. I'm sorry, it's actually Picard pursuing Riker. He believes that Riker's off doing something that he shouldn't, Riker happens to have a much faster ship, and we have a situation where these two friends are at odds here. I just saw the cover of it at New York Comic Con. It should be released here in the next few days. It's beautiful. I love the look of the thing. So that comes out January 27th. Presuming I get my part of it back to them on time. That is my first full-length Star Trek story. I did do a novella earlier in the year that is online for people to purchase now, called Star Trek Titan Absent Enemies. But this is, again, a full-length story, just something I always wanted to do, this particular kind of story, and they were willing to let me go with it, and so... I'm enjoying it. The next thing that I have out, probably chronologically, is going to be coming out from Silence in the Library Publishing. This is the anthology Apollo's Daughters. I just sent my edited copy back to them on that this week. I have the lead story that's in that anthology, and it's called Burnout, and it is a story set in the Overdraft universe that I created for my serial. This is a Bridget Yang solo story, Apollo's Daughters, the idea being it's male authors writing female lead characters as a companion volume to Athena's Daughters, which is all female authors writing female leads. This is one of the early adventures of Bridget Yang, head of sort of the Space Marine group that we've got in the Overdraft storyline. And it is a pivotal moment in her career, showing how she goes from being just a regular line mercenary soldier to being somebody who is leading a unit of first contact troops for these expeditions that we have in this series. We also meet a new villain in Burnout, and it's all elaborating on this world that my hope is I'll get some time to spend some time again in this universe and tell some more stories. I know I promised at the on the last page of Overdraft, the Orion Offensive, we would be doing another book here, and it's just been a matter of when I can schedule time to do it. I am simultaneously, as well as these other things. I'm working on my own trilogy that is unrelated to it, that I've been it's been one of those things where it's sort of been like the Kenobi story, where I've spent 6 or 7 years fiddling with this thing between projects. I'm just going to see what my schedule looks like here, over the next while, and see how much I can get done on it. Of course there are some other people that I've been talking with as well. And, of course then there's Star Wars out there too, and Star Trek and all the aforementioned things. It's really easy to get used to not writing. And I did take a little bit of a break there. After doing the Star Wars and the Star Trek books back to back to promote this novel, I'm back at the grindstone.
You foresaw my question about more Overdraft, because I loved that book.
I really enjoyed it. And again, this is a book that's out there, and there's also a short story prequel that's out there as well. It is fun to get to make up your own rules and for your universe, and to go wherever your interests take you. I certainly enjoy working in licensed universes and will continue to do it, for a writer, you need to be able to show that you can do everything at once. And so I hope to get back to some more Overdraft in the future.
Cool. And just to round up, we've got kind of a throwaway fun question for you, because we're all Star Wars fans. We all have ideas for what we would like to see in the future, specifically Episode 7. What would the kind of thing that you would like to see as far as what the galaxy looks like, what our characters are doing, that sort of thing?
Well, I will take whatever comes. I my feeling is that there are so many different possible ways that you can go. Obviously we got one possible way, with the stories that we had beforehand. I'd like to be surprised. I think that's the most important thing. I understand all the feelings that everybody had about the previous books, and previous books of mine included, and the devotion that we had to all of those things. I think the thing that I want to feel is surprise. Take us some places that we might not have imagined. Do some things that we might not have thought about. That doesn't necessarily mean they will be better or worse. I think one of the problems that we have, and I think I alluded to it before, when we're dealing with writing prequels or stories that happen between stories, is we always know where things are going. We're always just sort of filling in the blanks between point A and point B. With these movies, they have the opportunity to surprise us, to have the viewers not necessarily know what's going to happen. That may have been, the reason that they decided to do things the way that they've done, is to bring possibility back into the lives of characters whose histories were completely written, or if not completely written, pretty well delineated. This way things are not totally defined, and I like the fact that there's a chance that these films could really surprise me in ways that the previous films were able to, although I admit, in both the case of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, I read the books beforehand.
Scandalous.
Well,
spoilers.
In the Empire Strikes Back, I didn't actually understand everything I read, because I was, I think, 12 or something like that. And when it said that Darth Vader walks off the bridge quietly at the end of the book, I thought he actually walked off a bridge. So, and also Yoda didn't seem to be anything like the Yoda that I eventually saw. You know, and with Return of the Jedi, I think I read the Marvel Super Special that got out into circulation by accident. I read that the night before that movie came out. So I didn't have long to be spoiled. So.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for coming back on the podcast again. We absolutely loved A New Dawn and cannot wait to see what might be next for you in the Star Wars universe.
I appreciate that. And, you know, probably the next thing for me as far as Star Wars is concerned is I'll be writing that, you know, behind the scenes page that I always do on my website. That will probably come out sometime in November. FarawayPress.com. People can find pages on all of my previous stories and links to you know, what I've got coming out in the future. And people can also follow me on Twitter, JJMFaraway.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you to John Jackson Miller for coming on to the podcast and talking to New Dawn with us. And hey, it's the present day.
Magic.
The present day. The present day, although it's probably going to be the past by the time you listeners get your hands on this episode. Time is all wibbly wobbly. While we got Bria here, we've got a little bit of additional news to discuss.
Yes, the Star Wars YouTube channel released a very funny video today titled "Is Warwick Davis Going to Be in Episode 7? And the answer, spoilers, is yes.
Yay! And if you haven't seen the video yet, go watch really it. It's funny. Yeah. It's really
but,
good.
But that's all we know about it. He's going to be in Episode 7.
And there's period. No guarantee that he'll be an Ewok.
That would be cool, though.
It would be.
I think all like from now on, all casting announcements or stuff like that should be done like these videos.
I agree. Well, that's why
press
like
releases are boring.
When like all of the, you know, concept art is roaming around Tumblr, we get something like this, and I'm like, this is what I want to see: real, confirmed news, not things I have to hide my eyes on Tumblr and say no.
Yeah, by the way, if you're on Tumblr and you're passing around that concept art, please tag it.
If you're on the internet and you're passing around that concept art, stop it.
And we've got a mutual friend by the name of Nicole who brought up a very good point in regards to the concept art. Concept art is not storyboards.
No.
So.
Yes. It's a concept. Like, if you have the making of Return of the Jedi, you can go in and look at the concept art of Vader taking Luke to the lava throne beneath the Emperor's palace.
Yeah. So.
Huh. Someone write that fic.
I'm sure someone
I think you nominated
has.
Yourself.
Damn it!
I need to finish the first part of the triptych I'm working on.
I need to finish my fic, too. Oops.
I'm not writing fic.
See, this is how good Rebels is. Everyone but Nancy is writing fic again. And the only reason Nancy is because she's working on an original novel.
I did have an idea for a fic, though. With Kanan.
You should write it.
A Kanan and Hera fic.
You should definitely write
basically,
it, because I've got three minimized in my toolbar right now.
Basically, it's just my way to poo-poo on the attachment rule in written
form.
I think that Come needs on, to be written.
If I can write and publish what I wrote and published, you can write your.
Oh, I know I can write it. I'm just saying I want to finish my book first because I could actually sell that and make money off of it.
But Hera and Kanan?
I will do that when I'm done as a treat. Okay. For you and me.
Okay.
Okay, let's wrap the show up there before we get in any more trouble. this episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links. Help us keep the lights running on Twitter, where you can find us with the handles Tashi_Station, official show account. Bria is Chaos Bria. Nancy is Nancy Pants, Nancy with an I. I am Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we are the Tashi Station Network. You can find us on the iTunes Store and Stitcher. If you like what you hear, please do leave a review. It helps us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. Thank you for catching another episode, and thank you, John Jackson Miller, for coming on. We will catch you all next week. Bye.
podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.